Hey, listeners, I'm day drinking, so go over to www.mtgpress.com and check out if I actually wrote an article this week. You're in my future. I don't know if I'm going to write one in the next couple hours. We'll see.
And his name is John Cena!
I don't understand the John Cena. This is stupid. DJ, your memes
I'm
are
not
stupid.
The one who made the memes or advocates for them. I'm just trying to explain them to Grandpa Corbo.
That would have been a great rolling start to the cast, but you guys are still dicking around with John Cena memes, and it's been an hour and five minutes.
No, that was the rolling start, and then Corbin just barges in with, like, a reference that nobody's going to get.
Yeah.
The day drinking was the start of the podcast. That was
it
the...
was. So day drinking yes. can always be the start of the podcast.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go.
Mm-mm-mm. We've already started. Welcome to Brainstorm Brewery. I'm taking control of the cast because it's clearly up to me. Corbin's... His reflexes are dulled. He's a nocturnal person, and we're in the afternoon where Corbin's normally take a little nap.
Yeah, Jason is right about that. They did get me out of bed to podcast.
You're the one who said 2 o'clock would be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where you know you should be awake by that time, and like mentally you're like, that makes sense. That's enough sleep. But then you actually get there and you're like, man, I could just lay in bed for another 2 hours.
Well, wake up, crack a beer. Drink it and do some academic work. It's just like in college. This is the Brainstorm Brewery Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Ault. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm drinking a beer out of this handsome Brainstorm Brewery drinking glass that could be yours. We'll tell you more about that later. I'm joined by my other co-host, Mr. Corbin Hostler. Say hello to the people, Corbin. Wave a beer at him,
hey,
maybe.
Hey, people. I'm going to wave a beer at the people. Hello, people.
Yeah, I'm
Corbin's
drinking a good
already
one today.
Four beers in, so this podcast is going to get really raunchy really quick.
Hey, that guest talking is
yeah,
our.
That's what I do. I get raunchy. Yeah.
Well, and then we release an after hours, and then we unrelease that after hours.
Yeah. Woo!
Woo! That guy talking before it's his turn is our guest for the episode, Mr. Douglas DJ Johnson. Say hello to the people, DJ.
No.
Welcome, scholarship recipient, Douglas DJ Johnson. It is. I mean, I don't know how Finkel feels about it, but you just have to keep in mind, they gave you a scholarship to go to school, and then you became a football coach.
I don't think John Finkel remembers who I am at this point.
That's true.
It's probably true.
So where's a nice cut to get back into the episode?
That.
I'm joined today by these nerds so we can talk about... Yeah, the phrase, what's a nice cut to get back
into
the
episode?
Yeah,
that's perfect. It's just going to go. It's going to go from whatever we were talking about... To just that, because we recorded some after hours.
And now you know. And you're like, hey, what's after hours? Well, glad I'm pretending you asked. If you're not familiar with after hours, that is a perk that our patrons have access to. People that go to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery and give us a relatively small amount of money can have access to after hours, which are special. Ooh, golden cookie. Which are special, the special recorded, like, episodelets. Right? They're little, just little clips.
Episodelets.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what they are, Jason. They're episodelets. Get on your cookie, man. We know you want to.
All right. Click, 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 click. They're little vignettes. They're little five-minute clips. They're just like little aside stuff that, you know, really shouldn't be in the episode. And sometimes it's stuff that really shouldn't be in After Hours. It's just stuff that doesn't make the regular episode. And it's good value if you want to see what we're like.
Sometimes
when
it's stuff that doesn't make the After Hours either because it gets released and then we have to pull stuff from it. And then people...
I did reference that if you'll...
That's only happened 3 or 4 times.
This week. So yeah, if you want access to this drinking glass I'm drinking out of, our brand new tokens that we... Are we revealing them today? We can reveal the one, right? We're going to reveal a token on this episode.
Sure.
We have playmats and also there are going to be special rewards starting January 1st that only current patrons will have. It'll be nothing huge, but if you're on the fence, I would get locked in before January 1st because that's when we're completely revamping the Patreon and adding a bunch of new stuff. We're not taking anything away and making it worse, but we will be adding new stuff, and there's stuff that you'll want to get locked in on now. So go to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery. Give us as little as $1 a month, which is 20 or 25 cents an episode. With that, you'll have access to our Discord server where we hang out and have all sorts of dank memeage and just in general have a good time.
I can't wait till episode 400 when JJ clips together the montage of 20 or 25 cents an episode. And then I want to send out a poll and see how many people that 5 cents made a difference for. in terms of signing up. Like, well, he said it was 25 cents an episode, but then I counted the months in the year, and he's right. It is 20 or 25. I mean, that's just the savings.
Some months, it's a better value, that dollar. Some months it's not.
Well, I'll say this. Jason's gotten very good at that pitch. That was smooth. That was fluid. That was sounded like he was reading from a prepared script, but we know that's not true because Jason doesn't prepare. So that was really good.
I don't even read your show notes. I know that's good. I'm a goddamn professional. I don't understand why you're impressed when I do something real simple.
I will say that after last week when Jason was nice to our patrons, we actually had a nice little influx of patrons. So we're getting pretty close to the goal of 1750 when rip my chair. We will light this chair on fire, likely in violation of city or local or state laws of some sort.
And let's make an impromptu goal right now. If we bump it up to 1800, Corbin will be in the chair when we light it on fire.
Hey, Corbin, if you made it look like the chair was shaped like a cross, I bet you could burn it in your neighborhood.
Wow. We're not even in Alabama or Mississippi here, man. Come on. Like, what? And how would you even shape a chair like
get
a cross?
Chairs, I don't know,
okay,
man.
That's the
get
real...
more chairs, man. I don't know. Yeah, I don't
know. That's the real question here.
That's not my job. It just has to...
Like, maybe...
It just has to be close enough to fool the Oklahoma City Police Department. It's like, y'all burning a chair? That's a cross. All right, then.
Jesus. I don't think I'm going to burn it on my house. I'm going to drive like 10 minutes away until there's cows.
You have to drive 10 whole minutes to find cows?
You're in upstate New York, DJ. Don't you have to drive 10 whole counties to find cows?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I just assume that's how it is for most people, right? 10 minutes and I'm in the farm.
I bet I could find a cow in 8 minutes. I'm really competitive, though.
Oh,
I just have a nicer car.
There you go. Yeah.
I just drove faster. Which direction would I even go in to find a cow? That's interesting. That's way more interesting than Ultimate Masters, that's for sure.
Stop randomly. I could spin in a circle and stop randomly and find one, find the right direction.
I mean, sure. You could probably get to an outdoor shitter before me also. Like, what's your point?
I think you'd have to drive like Moo South. Instead of
wow,
Due South?
That was so embarrassing.
What? Moo South? What are you writing jokes for fucking Laffy Taffy rappers? Get out of here, Coach DJ.
That is correct. That was a Laffy Taffy joke. And he did it so seriously, and then he realized how bad it was.
I knew it was bad going in. I just tried to keep it.
If you make another bit, I think there should be a Patreon reward tier where DJ has to record a Brain Bites as football coach DJ.
Yeah, no kidding. That'd be great.
I'm okay with that.
Also, that was a really, really bad pun.
Yes.
I'm still...
No.
I'm a dad, and I didn't like that. Do you understand?
Yeah, like, it was just embarrassing. I actually feel like maybe that needs to be cut.
Just so we don't lose patrons. We're hemorrhaging subscribers!
Look, just out of a base level respect for DJ as a human being. Not even DJ as a person, but, like, DJ is just a member of the human race.
More like a base level respect for our listeners.
Yeah, that's true, too, yeah. All right, man. I'll say, okay, so I assume, I don't know what.
Buy Russian foils, guys!
Okay. Saffron Olive did do an EV article, as he does for every set, and it was really good, and he went very in-depth into UMA. And the moral of the story is, guess what, everybody? The set's good.
The moral
good.
Of the story is that I was right.
Weird how they... We were all right, DJ.
Okay, we were all right.
I saw the 40 box toppers. I went on a limb and said, oh, no, guys.
Well, I'm the one that gets to be vindicated because I spent the past 3 weeks trudging through the depths of Twitter to argue pedantically with every single idiot that tried to...
Yeah. So how can you say you were right about anything if you argued with idiots on Twitter?
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. Who's the real idiot?
That's true. That's fair.
You said good set is good, but you also argued with people.
I'd say get off your high horse, but we're going to have to get the step stool because you probably couldn't get up on a high horse.
Get off your high moose.
Yeah. Get it because you're short. Anyways, the EV is sweet. It's like $400 a box.
Buy them.
No, I think the last number I saw was $370 a box, not counting the box toppers.
Not counting the box toppers?
Yep. Obviously, this is all in flux.
Does that count foils and sub $1 cards?
It does. No, it counts foils, but not sub $1 cards.
Of which there will be plenty. Because yeah, a lot of these uncommons already are formerly rares, and they will be below a dollar, but I don't know if they stay there.
Martyr Sand is going to be $5, guys.
You're so shitty. You're bringing in stuff from before the podcast. I love it. So yeah.
All right. Here's what I'm gonna quote the relevant part of this article, and I will say that it seems like once people got over their initial rage,
by people he means them.
I've seen It seems like the response now that they've actually started spoiling the set, and I guess this is to be expected with the Magic community. They're always mad, and then it wasn't so bad. But people seem like, man, this value is really good. Now I'm excited. But I'm just going to read the Saffron Olive quote that I think sums it up. Basically, in the paper world, Ultimate Masters is a win for everybody. The value is high enough for drafting or cracking boxes to be profitable. And if you're not interested in gambling on sealed packs, you'll be able to get a great discount on a lot of Modern, Legacy, and Commander staples over the winter. And that sums it up. That's really all you need to know, right? That's what we've been talking about. We gave you, if you're interested, if anyone's listening and wants the full economics of this all and why the MSRP is what it is and why the value is what it is and what it's going to do, you can go back and listen to our episode a few episodes ago where we went deep on it. Yep. But so that's got a lot of sweet reprints. And it's the value is good. The EV is there. This is really good for Magic. It's already bringing stuff down.
Yep.
Also, I'm pretty excited about Noble Hierarch at Rare.
Yeah, there's some spicy rarity downshifts that I think people are going to really benefit from. They could have jammed back to basics at Mythic easily, and they didn't. They a couple pairs of pants got pulled down, like Laboratory Maniac beat it on
Frixian Tower. That's insane. I don't think anybody was expecting Frixian Tower.
Especially not at Rare.
I didn't get out of all my Chainer's Edicts. I had a big old wad of Chainer's Edicts I was ready to sell.
Well, I just didn't expect Phyrexian Tower at all. I mean, if it was printed, I would guess it would be at Rare, but I didn't expect it at all.
Yeah, they're aware.
I'm really happy about Through the Breach.
Yes, well, Phyrexian Altar shows they're listening to somebody.
Yes, yeah. Altar is a great one.
I mean, I'm not going to take credit because if they listened to me, they would have done it 3 years ago. So they're clearly not listening to me. But somebody said, hey, reprint Phyrexian Altar. So that'll be at Rare. That'll be great for making that, you know, EDH staple no longer a $75 card or whatever it was. So
Vexing Devil is like one of my favorite reprints in this set.
It's pretty spicy. Cards got some new art too. Some really good new art. So
I'll also say this. This is something that we've talked about a little bit before, but not a lot. They did a really, really, really great job with this set in ways that they have not previously of making it a little less of a gamble. Obviously, we're opening packs. It's always going to be a gamble. But the median price of the Mythics, which means if you just divide half and half, expensive to not expensive, the median price is very similar to the average price. Which means that
the median the is very cost similar to the is, mean, is what you
correct. Saying. So yes. So what it means is that the spread between the mythics is not as bad as it was in the past. There's no Tree of Redemptions that are a dollar and then a $50 chase card that you're going after. So you're on average, your box is going to be better is not the right word, but it's just not gonna be as high variance, and I think that's good. I think the cheapest mythic is Leovold right now? No, I'm sorry. Platinum Imperion, Lord of Extinction, are both 7/8. Balefire Dragon is 6. Yeah, Balefire Dragon's the worst, and it's $6. And that card was expensive before. So,
and it will be expensive.
They've done
again.
A great job. I think that Talrand is the cheapest rare.
I mean, it's in a group of other 10-cent rares, but yes, it's.
Yeah, that's the. So the rare slot.
Like,
yeah,
Magus of the Bazaar is also garbage.
Well, it's. It has to. It has to have some bad rares.
There are a lot of... Yeah, and the thing is, though, a lot of these bad rares that we're looking at as being cheap, they were at least $3 or $4 before, so they're going to get crushed here.
They're also just cards that are absurd and limited, for the most part.
That's true, and they're also just good cards. Like, Thespian Sage, for instance, is super disappointing to pull as a rare. It's $1.40, but the card itself was worth a lot before. It was worth $3, $4, $5. And that was pretty recent.
Foils are $15.20. That was a good time.
Yeah, so it's a good reprint. all in all. I mean, it was 350 before almost four. I mean, it's a fine reprint. So, I don't know. Pretty excited about the set. The rare and the common and uncommon spot. Also pretty decent. There's, even with current prices, there's, you know, a 10 to 12 that are $2 or more just at uncommon. So, and the nice part is most of these are going to rebound. Chandra's Edict, maybe not. But, you know, we're talking Sleight of Hand, Devoted Druid, Kodama's Reach, Kitchen Finks, Eternal Witness, Lava Spike. These are all cards that are most likely going to bounce back. So anyways, big fan. But here's the, this is my Breaking Bulk for the week.
Breaking Bulk time. Breaking Bulk time. Break.
Oh, yeah, Breaking Bulk. There's so much good stuff.
It's a pick. Breaking Bulk. The end.
This is the argument we had before the cast.
Wow, that's a hard transition. Jeez.
DJ thinks, well, I'm talking about the commons and uncommons in the set.
I got you.
DJ thinks that Martyr of Sands is not going to be a pick after this set.
Correct. It is a single printed common from Cold Snap that is now receiving a significantly larger print run than Cold Snap, and it goes in one single deck in Modern. So
two, Soul Sisters and Proclamartyr.
Sure.
Yep. Those are different decks. It is a casual life gain card.
Sure, because no EDH play, not really used in Modern or Legacy.
But think
else.
About what DJ said. DJ said it's not going to be a pick at all.
Well, what's a pick, dude? DJ picks nickel, so yeah, it'll
exactly.
be a nickel.
Exactly. But I think it won't be. I think it'll be 50, 75 cents. It'll be a quarter on a buy list.
You think it'll be quarter buy list at what date?
Yeah.
I don't want to bet on this.
Well, then why argue with him?
I have a much more exciting called shot later. But it's my Breaking Bulk, man. You guys know what it is, so I'm not going to like.
Yeah,
tease
I will.
It. But I think it's.
I mean, I will still pick these out of bulk after the reprint. But it is to put them in the case at like 25 cents in the store.
Okay.
I will.
Yeah, you're not. I don't see buy list.
I will pick this the same reason I pick like Llanowar Elves or like.
Yeah.
Some okay. stuff it well, just we'll feels see. Like you probably shouldn't be bulking it.
Yeah, I just think the card will still be 50 cents in a year.
Okay.
Wow. Oh, okay, that's a year. Okay.
Well, I mean, 6 months maybe. I don't know what you want. Like, it's going to drop. Obviously,
it's like $1
it's gonna drop
now.
A lot, but
yeah.
Well, it was $2 before the reprint, and I just think it's.
No,
I mean, the entire argument
I would,
was whether
I would be
or not
generous
it's an
and say, we'll say a year. Let's look at this again in a year.
Yeah. I mean, the whole discussion revolved on whether or not it was a reasonable Breaking Bulk pick, and I think it is, because that's the thing. If you're there this weekend. In your or whenever the set comes out and you're drafting it, you want your money back in every possible way. And maybe that means Martyr of Sands. Maybe we're all wrong. And Martyr Proc has actually been putting up results in Modern recently. That may be the other information I'm aware of that you guys aren't. But the deck has actually won things recently. So that's a thing. It won a classic or, you know, top 8 at an open or something like that. Was kind of been the thing online recently a little bit. So it's not just, I mean, it is a fringe deck, but it's got a little bit going for it at the moment that makes me think that the card's not going to completely crash. But that's mine. That's me. What do you guys got for Breaking Bulk?
I have
Invasion Uncommon.
What color?
Green.
Tangle?
No.
Tangle? I was going to say Tangle, yeah.
Is that what you said it after DJ said it? To make it sound like you said
I was
it?
Thinking, I was thinking the fog, and I was trying to work my way back to the name.
Uh-oh, Mr. Blue Mage, it's not Tangle.
Sapperling Kicker card?
No.
Hmm. I don't know the answer.
Invasion Green Uncommon.
Invasion Green Uncommon.
Something with an... Is that a set with elves? Is that a stupid elf set?
Elves are in the art.
Okay.
It is a sorcery.
Hey, I don't know. I can't think
Ooh.
Of it.
Woohoo! Scouting Trek. I stumped DJ.
Scouting
Trek. Search your library for any number of basic land cards. Reveal them. Set them aside. Shuffle your library. Put those cards on top of it in any order.
I didn't even know this card. What's it worth?
It's like 50 cents Card Kingdom, and like it's listed at $1.27 market price on TCG Player. So it's more on TCG Player than it is on Card Kingdom, which makes me think it could move. Although the price is pretty flat on TCG Player, so maybe it's just like a card that's just more on TCG Player. But yeah, Scouting Trek, no reprints. Real good in a lot of decks. Just, you know, my Tatiova deck resolves this and just has a really explosive turn. You basically just get as many lands as you can and you put most of them into play that turn. So yeah,
that's kind
of
cool.
I've never seen this card before.
Obviously. Yeah, me neither.
It's a pick.
Hmm.
Good job.
Good to know. Good pick. DJ, what do you got?
I have a M19 Uncommon, and it is...
An M19 yes. Uncommon. Hmm. All right, we're in my wheelhouse here. What color?
That might give it away. But, it's blue.
A blue Uncommon is... Mirror Image?
No.
Is that card a rare?
Mirror Image is not a rare.
I see.
Exclusion Mage?
Exclusion Mage is a... Psychic Corrosion?
There you go, Psychic Corrosion.
Oh!
Boom, got there. Oh, that's a thing in...
That relates to your pick of the week, too. Some bitch.
It's actually a thing in Standard right now, is how I got there, because I'm looking at... I needed to get some for Magic Arena, so I had to draft... Corset 2019, so I could uncommon draft and not have to burn a wild card.
Yeah, Psychic Corrosion is a 3-mana enchantment. It is very similar to Sphinx's Tutelage in that it says whenever you draw a card, each opponent puts the top 2 cards of their library into the graveyard. The biggest difference is that it says each opponent, not target player. So it might actually be better in EDH than Sphinx's Tutelage, because with Tutelage, in order to get more cards per turn or per activation, you have to like hit the grindstone wheel multiple times. And this is just significantly more consistent.
You can't do yourself.
Bro, you're missing the most important part of this card. Sphinx's Tutelage
is a target opponent, and then this you can't loot with it. But
you're missing the most important part, bro. This is a Standard deck.
Sure.
Mono blue mill.
Yes, I saw the TCG Player thing, and then there's also just like the fact that it's a casual card that like the reason Sphinx's Tutelage became a dollar is because it's casual, not because of Standard, but. This is a card.
Even though it did win a GP, if I recall correctly.
Probably at some point, but
I think Andrew Cuneo won a GP with it, or top 2 or something.
But yeah, this is a card top that two, you pick out of bulk, you set it aside, then it's a dollar a year down the road.
Mm-hmm. Or you have fun, you play it in Standard with Drowned Secrets and
yes,
that stuff.
Because nothing's more fun than losing at FNM.
Hey man, you can lose. This is an MTG Arena deck where everyone's playing Bruise.
Well, there you go. It's an MTG Arena deck where you lose because you cast Mission Briefing and can't find in your because your graveyard doesn't bring up enough shit. Your screen's not wide enough.
Yes, it does.
You can't click on it.
It scrolls, bro. Have you played much Arena? Arena is sweet.
I've noticed people complaining that they there's some spell they play where they can't get some out of their graveyard.
So no, Jason's never.
The game definitely still has. Yeah, the game definitely saw some amount of bugs or whatever, right? It's in beta after all.
I played Chandelure this
week.
It's
very good.
Have you played Chandelure? That game's fun.
Not this week, certainly not.
I did a sealed beta tournament, and I won. Because I know the secret is pick Paralyze in the first 5 picks. Because it's removal.
Yes.
You know who didn't know that? Okay, LSV in Vegas. So, just saying. I'm not saying I'm a better booster drafter than LSV. I'm just saying I pick Paralyze.
All right, man. Good meme. All right, DJ, let's hear this artist thing, bro. Break it down.
So there's a lot of artists that are boycotting GP/Magic Fest next year.
Any names we know?
Izzy? I'll pull up the list.
I was
going to
say, like, not off the top of my head, but...
I'll pull up the list.
And so I believe a lot of their complaints were centered around the fact that they don't get enough benefits for going to GPs, that it is not financially worth it for them. And I sort of have mixed feelings on this because I do empathize with the fact that Channel Fireball has been very lackluster in their tournament organization as of this past year. There's a lot of things that Channel Fireball could do better to improve GP experience. And I recognize that artists are a big part of why a lot of people go to GPs, but there's another half of me that sort of sees a lot of parallels between vendors and artists, and I might get a lot of flack for this, and I'm just trying to open up a discussion here. I'm not saying that this is just hardline, one specific opinion, whatever.
Don't worry, DJ. I get your nuanced opinion. Yes,
the people who care about this the most are the most reasonable people.
Yes,
too.
That is true, Jason.
They won't send you a tweet with lots of clap emojis in it. You'll be fine.
But yeah, I see a lot of parallels between vendors and artists. I think that vendors are one of the big draws to a GP. I have to imagine that if there was a constructed GP with no vendors, but there were artists, that GP would have a significantly lower turnout than if it was all vendors, no artists. So I think that vendors just they're both independent organizations that are there to promote their own business. And vendors pay several thousand dollars to have tables. I'm not saying artists should have to do the same, but we don't really.
All right, so I just want to make sure I understood that correctly. You said if GPs had no vendors, but they had artists, they would have fewer people than if they had vendors, but no artists. You're saying vendors are a bigger draw for GPs than artists.
I think that's definitely true for a constructed GP. I don't know if it's the same for like a sealed GP, because sealed, you don't necessarily have to bring, you don't have to find cards on site, right? Like, it's just you bring your money and you build your decks and whatever, and then you go home and sell the cards online.
Mm-hmm.
But for a modern or standard GP, I think there's a massive crowd who just who relies very heavily on vendors to have that last sideboard card, or to switch their deck for the PTQ, or to just be able to construct a deck on site Saturday morning, or if they have their deck list and they need missing 10 or 15 cards. I think the crowd of people who rely on vendors is significantly larger than the number of people who would attend a GP specifically for the artists.
Okay, I'm going to read the list here. And keep in mind, I'm not an expert on art, so I have no idea how big or not any of these names are, but I'm just going to go down the list. Steve Belladin, Johan Bowden, Paul Scott Canavan.
Maybe?
Yeah, whatever. Jonas DeRoe, Nils Ham, Suzanne Helmy, Lake Hurwitz, Izzy, Thomas Jezudik, Titus Lunter, Ben Meyer, Mitch Malloy, Slavoweir Maniac, Winona Nelson, Jason Rainville, Shreya Shetty, Chase Stone, Randy Vargas, Svetlin Velinov, Lars Grant West, Jim Nelson, Chris Seaman, Ryan Panikost, Jim Pavlovek, Bastian Lukuf Deharm, Dave Kendall, Darkin, Joe Slucher, Doug Alexander Gregory. I've heard of a few of those.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of some of these too.
Steve Belladin's a big one, right?
Yes, and so I think Nils Ham is a pretty big name too.
Titus Lunter's pretty popular in the community.
Yeah, he's growing. Agreed. He's a fast growing artist.
So there are, and I think what they wrote about is that the current GP model is working for, just so people know, the backstory to this, if you haven't heard, right? All the artists are getting less and less at GPs. Before, they used to be a big deal. They'd fly out two or three of them. They'd put them up in a hotel, all this stuff. Well, now, thanks to the wonder of economics or monopolies or whoever you want to blame for this particular issue, they're now being charged, I believe, or at the very least, they are not getting anywhere near the amount of benefits they were getting before.
Yeah, there's a list of amenities that have slowly been cut over the past few years. I mean, I'm looking at the article right now, and paid flights, paid hotel, break room, place to store gear, free large tables, and unclear or hotel sponsorships, that kind of thing. And it says also that they are currently being asked to host art classes, seminars, and workshops without compensation. Those should definitely be paid for. I mean, I'm not asking people.
Honestly, that complaint's less that's like the least legitimate complaint, because they could just say no.
True.
If you're not getting anything anyways, be there,
right?
Like, I can understand the pressure. If they're giving you a flight, you feel pressured to do something for them. But if they're not doing that, you just tell them no.
Right.
That said, I'm going to push back on this note that when I think about a GP, I've had people give me cards to have signed by artists at GPs. I've never had anybody give me cards to sell to a vendor for them.
Oh, I have.
I think all the vendors...
I have.
To a specific vendor?
Yes.
To a, yes, clearly you would have, DJ. I mean, and maybe even Jason would have. But the average attendee is not like, oh, Cool Stuff Inc.'s going to be there. No offense to Cool Stuff Inc., but I better go sell my cards to Cool Stuff Inc.
I'm not saying that there's a giant crowd of people who are asking for a specific vendor. I'm just saying vendors as a whole have a very large part of the GP experience in addition to art, like, as well as artists.
Well, I think that people, I think you're right that people definitely don't want to admit that the ability to sell cards at GPs makes attending them way easier for people, because people spend money to get there with the assumption that they're going to get there and sell their cards.
Yes.
If they just showed up to a GP all of a sudden and couldn't sell their cards and then didn't have cash to pay for their hotel room to their buddy or whatever, I think that, that's, I think you're right that it matters more to people than they're going to admit. I don't think it matters more to more than artists, though. I mean, artists get advertised on the main, you know, the that's GP whatever with special guests, this person, and they just are viewed and clearly I think have a value to the community based on all of this in a way that, you know, that vendors just don't. So I don't know.
I'm staying out of this, like, because. No one reasonable has a strong opinion about this, but...
Well, that's true. I think what you're saying, DJ, could be true, but it's never going to be viewed that way.
I agree like that. I'm not expecting to rally people behind my opinion. I'm just saying I see a lot of parallels between the two organizations and between the two groups. And, like, I'm just saying we don't get paid flights. We don't get paid hotels. We don't get any of these amenities that are on this list, and we survived. Obviously we have higher volume. We are a literal business or organization with thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars behind it that can support such an organization, but, like,
yeah. And yeah. The other thing, you know, is what too...
I bet the artists that actually have a line aren't boycotting, because Noah Bradley said he's still gonna go to, he's like, I support my other artists and blah blah blah, but I still make a shitload of money. I'm gonna still go. I bet Steve Argyle keeps going. I bet Mark Poole keeps going. I bet people that have a line are going to keep going. And people that don't have a line...
The people who make this list.
Yeah, the people who make money are going to... Who make the most money are going to keep going.
The well-established artists who have sort of found their niche in organizational systems and managed to turn GPs into a profitable endeavor, they're not going to stop going.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to Noah about it, though, and it is, you know, not every artist is lucky enough to have had the super, a lot of great art gets forgotten about on bad cards,
I agree.
And that's something that artists have very little control over. So, you know, I feel for these people who are in this position, it kind of sucks. It especially sucks to have it taken away from you. I don't know.
I'm not we'll see saying how it goes. Like the, that. We should all just throw artists.
No, and I don't think you are. I don't think you are, and I'm not trying to imply.
It's that just a question that popped up into my mind because I saw a lot of parallels between the two groups.
Yeah, and that is a model. Some shows, not Magic related specifically, right? But some shows exist for artists, and they pay to set up their booth, right? It's not necessarily uncommon in other places, but so I don't know. The whole thing's pretty interesting. Do you guys think that this is a? Do you think this is Channel Fireball just saying, hey, this seems like you don't need our help anymore because you've got a bunch of people, or we see people in these lines? Because obviously some people have had a lot of success with it. Or do you really think it's just a penny pitching move?
I think it's just Channel Fireball cutting corners, personally.
Okay.
There's been a lot of aspects of GP backend that Channel Fireball has been lackluster on in the past couple of years, and... I definitely think it's just them not being able to handle these large-scale events as well as Star City.
Well, Star City hasn't run an event this large in a long time.
But, two or three years ago, when Star City was handling 3,000 or 4,000-person GPs, they were well-run.
Yes, when they were doing three a year. Not one every weekend, sometimes two every weekend. Right? True. Like, I think that has to be taken into account. Like, yeah. It's a big difference. But sure, I don't know. I mean, the GP
series every weekend, though, like, it's
for 400 people or 800 people or whatever, on a not worldwide basis.
True.
It's just easier. I'm not saying you're right or wrong, but I mean, it is just easier. But all that said, the GP system, if you like it, or the Magic Fest system, if you like it, continue to enjoy them. But it is more expensive to run events now than it ever has been in the past. And that goes for venues and overhead, as well as actually paying judges cash now instead of promos, which were provided by Wizards before, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think there's any relief coming to people upset about the yes. GP structure,
like,
is basically the way I'm putting this.
Yeah, I understand that the biggest difference is that artists are being viewed as vendors now instead of honored guests. I get right. that.
Yeah. And I do think that Channel Fireball and or Wizards, they do double dip on this, right? They want to treat if they want to treat them as vendors, fine, that's their right, but
they have to, promoting them as guests while treating them as vendors.
Yes. Right, et cetera. So,
but they,
promote, interesting.
Yeah, they also promote vendors on this site. Like, if you go to the GP website, there's a big tab for vendors, and we get an entire page dedicated to, like, this is who will be there to...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not... That's the thing. You know, the artists get promoted on the front page, the vendors have their own page. And so that's them trying to double dip. Also, vendors don't get to take a bunch of work. Basically, when a vendor buys cards, you're making a lot... Like, you're not just making what you can do on the weekend. You're making what you get to take home. And artists don't get to do that.
Yes.
And they can't hire multiple people to really make it any easier. If somebody wants you to do a signature, or some of these artists have this crazy they do, there are all kinds of upgrade options. And sometimes signatures that take them 5 minutes to do.
Yes.
Or whatever.
And alters, and yes, I understand.
Yeah, and yeah, their time is, their earning potential is just much less upfront. So
yes,
we'll see what happens. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see if any changes come as a result of this pushback, or if CFB says, well, you know what, we've got enough artists who like doing this that this is just the way it's going to be.
I think they've basically said that.
Yeah, they had a PR response on Reddit, and it was
shit downvoted out of it.
Yeah, it was less than well received.
Well, obviously, but what did it say? Well,
it basically said, we're gonna provide this and this, and it was stuff that appears to have already been provided, and it was just sort of a tone deaf response from what I skimmed over in terms of like having concerns met and read. It was like, we hear you, we'll give you this and this, and it's like, well, we already got that and this. I don't know.
Well, good for them trying. I mean, that's PR 101, right? At some point, you are the PR person who has been told this is the way it is by your superiors, and it's your job to do what you can with it. And you,
yeah,
he lost a lot all of that times, sweet stuff like, Reddit karma.
Well, a lot of times stuff like that happens, and people blame the PR team. Or there's such bad PR. How can Wizards be such terrible at PR? Blah blah blah. Well, the answer is somebody good at PR has gotten marching orders from someone not good at PR, and they're your boss, and you do what you do. And it's not your fault. All you can do is tell them how it's going to be received, and then when it's received exactly as it is, that sucks for you.
Yeah.
But that's the deal when you work in PR. That's just the reality. Interesting. All right. Well, let's move on.
That was its own entire episode.
That was interesting. That was a good. That was a good discussion.
Thing and just
and then just not release it because DJ. Pissed off the most opinionated people in the Magic
community. Well, I'm actually very interested to see. I, like I said, I think that DJ has some valid points. I don't know if his conclusion is correct, but
I don't really have a conclusion. That's the thing.
Out.
Is like I did.
Well, your conclusion was that vendors do more for the attendance of GPs
yes,
than artists.
That is
that's
my conclusion.
Conclusion.
Yes, that yeah. part is. I'm not saying.
I want to see how people take that.
I'm not saying anything further than that in terms of like what the solution is to the vendor boycott. I have no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I have no.
This should all turn out great, and I'm glad I stayed out of it.
Yes.
I'm excited to see what happens. See if people are like, oh, reasonable take, DJ, or if they just light him on fire. All right, DJ, do you have any emails?
What I will say is if you thought that was a reasonable take and you're not a patron, maybe consider becoming a patron to make up for the
pay my legal fees.
People that are going to abandon us in droves.
Good save, Jason.
Yeah. Do we have any emails this week, DJ?
Yes.
Let's hear them. I like it when other people are saying controversial things.
What was the last controversial thing you said?
That didn't get cut from an After Hours.
Well, that's the rub, you see. I'm very good at saying controversial things that don't make it to air.
No, you're very good at saying, hey, that controversial thing I said, is there a way for that not to make it to air?
Actually, one of my favorite things is people, I'm not just going to say meeting me, but like who get to hang out with me and, I'm not saying get to hang out with me. Who get to see
get
me in
to
a situation.
Hang out. Whoa.
Yeah, let me rephrase.
Whoa.
People
That's
who
another
get
Hollywood hostler.
Cut, Corbin.
Yeah.
People who see me have the opportunity, whether by luck or whether we choose to hang out, whatever. Just people who get to see me when I'm not on air, when I'm not doing coverage, when I'm not making video, when I'm not being as professional as I usually like to be, because I've had people just be like, whoa, what? It's like, what did you think?
Yeah, Corbin did keg stands in high school. He's a cool dude.
I didn't do keg stands till college.
Another controversial opinion on the notch, Corbin.
Yeah, did it. He no, was come, only if you 20. Ever interested,
Corbin did keg stands wild. Mostly because his legs were always broken. He relied on upper body strength.
Keg stands were fun, man.
All right. This is
I was trying to give DJ time to get emails ready. Let's go.
Titled Finance Stuff, $20 patron here from George Wall. DJ, Jason, occasional Horst Corban. Congratulations to DJ for dropping the F-bomb on me. You're 30 seconds into casting with another podcast. I believe this was after I was on Cartel Aristocrats about a month ago. Brainstorm Brewery is rubbing off on you nicely. I love everything about that.
He said rubbing off on you.
I'm watching the reserve list hype slow as we approach the holiday. I'm looking to pick up playsets of some legacy staples, especially Lion's Eye Diamonds. I have a chance to buy 2 LP, 1 MP for around 600 CAD, 460 US. That's a very good deal.
Do it.
Months ago.
Do it.
I'm wondering how much cheaper reserve list cards like duels and LEDs get, if holding out is really worth it. I can use the cards immediately, but don't want to buy in too early. I'm not expecting $100 duels, but I also saw LEDs around $330 locally a few months ago. Thank you for the great weekly podcast, and I guess Corban for being a token whipping post.
Hey,
tell Jason to ship my new and better glasses to the following address. Bleep, 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 bleep.
No,
bleep,
no, 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 bleep. Read it. DJ, read it.
Yeah, transcribe. Do what you always do.
Via Bluetooth Tamagotchi.
Actually forward me that email right now.
Seriously. So Jason can read it?
so I could maybe see if I sent this by
the
glasses or
yeah.
not. Yeah.
I believe these are already, they probably already shipped out unless Anderson screwed up something up.
Yeah, unless hey guys, Anderson screwed something up. Wow.
I'm going to actually answer that. Are we talking shit on the intern?
Yeah.
No.
What?
Yes. Yes, we are, Corbin. Go ahead.
I want to talk shit on the intern.
Absolutely. Okay. Go ahead.
He seems like a very nice guy.
What? That's not shit talk. He has Guy Fieri Crocs on purpose, dude. He didn't have to buy them for a bet.
I like, I don't know. I've never worn Crocs, but they look like they could be comfortable.
They're so comfortable.
Now. Yeah, I think that the reserve list is going to take off again next year. Not maybe to the same extent or whatever, but for people who don't know, this seems to be a trend that we've noted for 6 or 7 years now. Even that we've been talking about this. Cards go crazy basically late January, February through June,
tax
July.
Refund season.
Yep, I think that's it's always what we've attributed it to is the tax refunds are a big part of it. Just not having holiday spending is probably a big part of it. It's also the winter still in, January, February. So people are in, they're playing Magic. And that's when you see a lot of the growth. And we saw it again in this past year with all the reserve list buyouts and everything else. That's when you see the biggest growth on Magic cards. And then as we've seen, it tails off in the fall as people get busy with family stuff or the new standard set or what have you, right? And that may be all. It may be that. It may not be that the cards go up for a specific reason in the spring. It may be that they just get ignored in the fall because people are playing standard at rotation. You know, I don't know the correlation causation here, but I do know that in the spring is when your cards go up. So if you have a good deal on LEDs before the holidays right now, take it.
Since we said nothing controversial there, let me say that those Crocs are insanely comfortable. And wearing them sockless to go to the mailbox, they're very warm. And they look ridiculous. And they were championed by Mario Batali, who's a creep. And
Jason, do you wear Crocs?
I wear them to the mailbox.
I never had Crocs.
And then before. Somebody gave my daughter a free pair of little girl Crocs that her little girl couldn't fit anymore. And then, so Lily wants to wear her Crocs when I wear my Crocs. And she calls them the check the mail shoes. Because look, I'm not wearing them to the store. We wear them to the mailbox. But for that brief trek to the mailbox, they keep my feet warm. And look, Mario Batali's a creep. But if he does sexually harass you, he will give you a cinnamon roll recipe. So it's not like you get nothing out of it.
So, I think this went to over review, the heads of so many listeners.
Warm Crocs, cinnamon roll recipes, matching outfit with your daughter / your intern. There's a lot to be said for those Guy Fieri Crocs that I bought with your patron money. When you went to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery, we hit $500, I think it was, 2 years ago.
No, it was $1,000.
It was $1,000? All right. That's depressing. We hit $1,000 last year for and just in time for no, Halloween it, no, for listen. Me to be Guy Fieri.
Yeah, listen, it's not depressing, and this is why, because I care less about the number, and I care more about the
number of patrons, which has never been higher.
Right, and at that time, we had some very dedicated patrons who really wanted to see you do the Guy
Fieri. We're paying a lot of money for
the
guy.
So good on them.
And I didn't disappoint. I didn't wear a wig. True. I dyed my hair. My hair was fucked up for months. I did.
We probably have listeners who don't even know about.
Yeah. Oh, so if you're a new listener,
it's been over a year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went full Fieri for like the entire month of October and November, like late October, early November, for like 4, 5, 6 weeks. I was like, my hair was dyed. Like I lived Fieri. Every Halloween party I went to, I was in that costume. I did time on stage or pictures of me doing stand up as Fieri. Like I went balls deep.
Jason's wife loved it.
Oh, yeah, because I took her to Flavortown.
Yeah, that's...
And now she's pregnant. Yelp. So, like, look.
That's true. Have we announced that on the podcast? Have you said that before?
I don't know. Like, you're not supposed to jinx it. You're not supposed to jinx it, because...
But then you did.
You used the word kids plural on Twitter, so...
Yeah, whatever. Well, look, yeah, man, my boys can swim, anything, so... If something happens and we don't end up having a kid, we'll have another one eventually. Like, it'll be fine, like... I think, I don't know, I was on the swim team in high school. I think my sperm will be fine. They got high motility or whatever. So I'm not worried about that. What I am worried about is having a second girl.
You think you're on the swim team, so you're more likely to impregnate somebody?
Yeah, it means your sperm are better swimmers.
Okay. They learned from their father?
Yeah, through DNA, Corbin. They have my DNA, 100% of it.
Swimming is an innate ability, not something you're taught.
Look at Michael Phelps, man. He's got those giant jug handle ears for hydrodynamics. He's got it all, man.
Is hydrodynamics a thing?
He's got short legs and a big torso. He's got the big, like...
What would you call it? Like, there's aerodynamics?
I don't know. Yes. No. I think it's correct. I've just never heard it before.
He's got that underbite so he can filter krill out of the pool and not have to stop to eat meals. Like, Michael Phelps was born to swim, and so are my boys. That's all I'm saying. So...
You might have a girl, though, man. You might have another girl.
I doubt I'm going to lose the coin flip twice. And if we're in trouble because we don't there's not another planeswalker name we can agree on. Like if it's a boy, it'll be named Soren, but if it's a girl, we don't know. We're gonna fight over it.
I doubt I lose the coin flip twice.
I mean, there's all those people who were gonna be mad at me for artist stuff just immediately remobilized against Jason right there.
Jason doubts that he loses the coin flip again.
Look, if you have two girls, you know what I'm saying, and you can't say it out loud, but I just did. So you get to look at your wife and be like, "That guy's a prick," but you get to like be like, "Yeah, I had two girls. My life is hell." I get it, man. It may not be so bad now, but wait till they're both teenagers. You know?
Yeah, I agree.
You'll understand. Agree so, what I'm saying is, I don't think my luck's that bad.
Wow,
Jesus.
Wow, I can't wait to have another kid now. I just think about everything Jason's saying about it, and I have a little girl, and I just have to listen to Jason.
Be right.
If I have a kid in a couple years, and he's got like a 6, 7-year-old girl, he's just going to be telling me all the ways in which having a girl is worse than having a boy.
Okay, well, my kid is like a velociraptor, because she's already opening every door in the house, and like... the first time you see your kid open a door, like, by, mm-hmm. you know, you feel like they felt in Jurassic Park when they saw the Velociraptor open the door. They're like, oh, so I'm not safe anywhere in this building.
That's correct. Yep. I used to occasionally take a nap on the couch or whatever and let Ben just wander through the house. It's childproof, right? He'll be fine. Then he started opening the back door and he can go outside. Yeah, it got rough. So we put a lock at the top of the door that latches onto it for our sliding back door. And then it took me less than 12 hours to just break it immediately by trying to open the door normally. We childproofed it, and it got me.
He didn't Corbin proof it. Ugh, door bad, Corbin smash.
That's pretty much what happened. And my wife got home, and I was like, hey, Marianne, I don't know. I really think it's cool that you put this lock up here. And I don't really know what your expectations were.
But Ben broke it.
I totally expected to break it within a day. And guess what? I did.
Ben broke that lock.
Yeah, he pulled it so hard, Marianne. He just ripped it right off.
He's got a low center of gravity. He can generate a lot of torque rotating that torso.
Yeah, there you go. Man. All right, let's try to bring this back around to magic.
Why?
Why? Because people get tired of hearing about our kids.
No,
they don't.
Okay, you said it.
If they wanted to hear about MTG Finance, they would listen to an inferior podcast like Cartel Aristocrats or Fast Finance.
Whew. Wow, you just came out and said it, huh? Don't worry, man. I have seen people defend both of those podcasts as, quote, the best financial podcasts on the internet.
Oh, I saw that generally, today. People, I made the mistake of joining a finance Facebook group, and
I also saw that today. Did I say generally it's people on those podcasts saying that?
This time it wasn't.
No, I'm just kidding. We have nothing against them.
No, we have a friendly rivalry with those podcasts, and if they take that as a slight, then they
clearly do something. Well, at least Fast Finance clearly does something very different than what we do.
Cartel Aristocrats has all of us on a lot, so they don't do it that different. We mostly say the same shit on there. So,
actually, my favorite thing to say about Cartel Aristocrats, especially to their faces, is to call them the most derivative podcast ever made.
Ooh,
I think you came up with that.
I was probably talking about Constructed Resources.
I like to call them the most derivative podcast ever made. It's funny. No, real talk though. If you guys like finance podcasts, you should go check
those. You should listen to all of them. Honestly, you should do your.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah.
Everyone does something different. Everyone, and that's the thing, right? Everyone has their own take on it, right? You don't have. I guess there's maybe one, but Cartel Aristocrats is not full of people who run stores or, you know, they don't necessarily have that. They don't all have that level of experience at the local level, right?
Fast I mean, it's just none of it's that. It's just Jim that does it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So there you go. We said nice things about it. We made fun of them, but we said nice things too. So whatever, go listen to them after you listen to this. Let's do pick of the week.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
My pick of the week is, I'm not going to say risky because it's like a 15-cent card, but it's just another very YouTube video-esque card.
It's cheaper than your breaking bulk pick. That's cute.
Yeah, if somebody goes out and makes a YouTube video involving this card in a modern deck, hint, hint, Corbin.
Yeah, say wink, wink, Corbin. Yep, sure.
Then it could theoretically go to like a dollar or two. And it is Trapmaker's Snare because Mission Briefing came out in Guilds of Ravnica recently. And the way that card is worded is different than Snapcaster Mage. And it lets you cast Archive Trap out of your graveyard with the alternative cost if your opponent has searched your library. So I think one of the better mill decks that could come about in the future is just very more streamlined and focused on Archive Trapping people because that's basically the best card in your deck. So it's 0 mana for 13 cards, and I think you might just want to load up on 12 copies of that through Mission Briefing and Trapmaker Snare. And Trapmaker Snare is printed in Zendikar with only one printing, just like Archive Trap. And yeah. So I think those two sort of go hand in hand, although Archive Trap is a little more risky towards the reprint side of things. I don't know when it could get reprinted, but it's definitely just sort of that thing where Trapmaker Snare and Archive Trap go hand in hand, and you could theoretically see this mill deck come out of nowhere that's just turn two, Trapmaker Snare, double Archive Trap you, and then turn three or four, they just Mission Briefing you if you fetch and then kill you. So,
yeah, I will say that mill is sort of under the radar good in Modern. Now, current Modern, like, as of today, is a little too broken for the deck to be great. It's still fine.
Yes.
But, you know, assuming, and this is my assumption, that Modern will get shaken up at some point, Mill has a lot of pieces now, and whether it's Trapmaker Snare or not, Field of Ruin made it so much easier to trigger Archive yes. Trap because they're forced Absolutely. To search, yep. even if they don't have anything to find.
Yeah, and so, Field of Ruin is yeah. significantly better in a mono-blue deck where it doesn't conflict with
your blue-black.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing is, you know, even if we decide Glimpse isn't important, I actually think Crypt Incursion is one of the most important cards in the Mill deck.
I mean, that and Leyline of the Void, life. Yeah. Leyline of the Void's very, very necessary too, but...
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know that... You know, I don't know what comes of that, but I don't know. I don't hate the pick. It is super cheap. Also, for all we know, they're going to redo Traps at some point, right? That was kind of a cool subtype of cards.
If they go back to Zendikar again.
Well, I think they are, right? Because Zendikar was really popular, and they expressed that they knew that people were upset with it the second time around because they went back to Zendikar, and they didn't do what people liked the first time around. They did the Eldrazi that people liked from Rise of the Eldrazi, but yes. they didn't do the Adventure World feel. The allies were just stupid. Like there were some individually okay cards, but it was just
Cohort just is literally the worst keyword ability they've ever made. It's worse than
support.
Banding.
Support.
Support's right there. Shrive is also like too. Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Shrive was. What I'm just even in BFC, everything in BFC was bad, man.
Yes.
So it's just really sad. So. I think they are going to go back to Zendikar. I don't know when. I don't know what their timeline looks like.
I mean, if you're
like.
Going
But they're
by,
going to go back, and they're going to prove it.
Probably
they can do
6 years.
By an article. Mark Rosewater made an article recently explaining more about the Rabia scale, which basically is just a scale of 1 to 10 and how likely they are to return to a plane. Uh-huh. Where I think Dominaria, Ravnica, and Innistrad are the only three that get a score of 1, which is, yes, we will return to here over and over. And then Zendikar's a 2. So it's very, very close-knit in terms of this is a plane that we recognize that people love and we'll go to it over and over again.
Yeah.
What did Kamigawa score?
I actually want to read this article. This article.
Because here's
sweet.
The thing: everybody remembers opening packs of Saviors of Kamigawa and being like, "That's pithing needle or nothing." But like every card from Saviors of Kamigawa is like a $30 EDH staple now. So like, if you played sealed at the time, Kamigawa right, Bluff was great. If you played Blog, it was great. And then EDH, it's full of good cards. So like. Nobody wants to go back to Kamigawa Block because they like remember, oh, Soul Shift sucks or whatever. But like, that was a fun set. Fun set to play limited, fun set to play block, and it made EDH. So they're never going to go back because people are going to bitch, but like, they really should.
I think they're going to revisit it in things like Commander products or whatever, core sets.
Well, they did. They're like, well, here's a ninja. So
yeah. Well, that way people.
I actually just looked it up, and Kamigawa gets an 8.
That's never going back.
Unpronounceable names, man. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's got a very high scale. Rabia, the name of the scale is Rabia scale because Rabia is the location of Arabian Nights, and that's at a 10. So that is.
Oh, that's funny.
We are never going back here ever again.
I like that.
But it basically said, here's the last paragraph for Kamigawa. As I've explained numerous times on social media, this return is a tough sell for me to make internally based on how disastrous the first event went. The biggest factor is that a return hinges on how much we're allowed to change and still call it Kamigawa. The set has minimal mechanical space we want to return to and many creative choices we would do differently if we started over with the source material. I wouldn't count out the chance of a return, but it's not a big one.
Yeah, it sounds like a thing they can... For the small amount of people who like it, they can just... do fan service with Commander sets or whatever.
Yeah, and they know that people will abandon the game in droves just for the meme value because people are like, I'm quitting forever. 8th edition borders!
It's just very easy for them to appease those people with something lesser. But
yeah, and
those really people? Cool.
They have Tamiya floating around too
you
to
mean
provide story
me?
Value.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm those people, sweet. Just saying.
They are going to go, but the only thing is, you know, their cycle internally, I believe they always have a 5-year plan. Now, I don't know how that's changed now that it's not blocked. I imagine 5-year plans were much easier when you were designing one block a year instead of a bunch of individual sets or whatever. So we'll see. But I think, so I don't, what I'm saying is I don't know if we're going back to Zendikar next year or in 3 years or in 6 years or whatever, but we are going to go back to Zendikar and they are going to have a chip on their shoulder to do it right the next time around. Yes. And whenever that comes, that makes me very excited about allies. It makes me very excited about stuff like traps, stuff like the quests. In Quests of Gemstone?
No. Quest for the Gemstone Blade is the +1/+1 counter one. Quest for Renewal is the
untapped. Quest for Renewal is the expensive one. It's like $3. So
the expeditions are pretty good too. Like Colony Heart still gets played.
By expedition, you have to sort of specify.
Yeah, you confuse me there.
The expeditions. What's ambiguous about that?
There's maps. There's.
Oh, you're talking about Colony Heart.
Colony Heart and Zektar Shrine got played too.
For a second,
right?
I thought you were talking about BFC the expeditions. Like the full art
masterpieces are. As long as we're talking about it.
Well, those are cool too, for what it's worth.
I don't know. Like, those cycles were cool.
They're going to go back and they're going to reprint Fetchlands again, man. That's what it's going to be.
I mean,
that's the next
cool.
I mean, that's what they would do if they really were afraid of the set selling, but I don't think that they are afraid of...
Also, they don't want it.
They used the fetches and cons because they were genuinely afraid of cons just pooping the bed. So they used it as an insurance policy.
Cons?
I think
wasn't great.
Yes.
Which is odd because...
That is true. They were afraid that cons would not sell well, so they included the fetches.
Which is odd because multicolor sets always do well, but... anyways, Zendikar will be sweet whenever we do go back to it. And I doubt they'll put fetches in it, to be honest, because they don't want them in standard.
Yes.
Speaking of Zendikar,
guys, my pick of the week.
Is Zendikar based.
Okay.
This is predicated on its high degree of EDH play in 22,000 decks, making it a green staple. And the fact that it was excluded for some reason from Ultimate Masters. The card, of course... The number, what am I looking at here? The 17th most played green card in EDH Rec, Oracle of Moldiah.
Card's expensive.
Card is expensive. I don't like to pick high buy-in stuff, but I think you've got another year until this gets jammed in Battle Bond or whatever end of the year 2019 set it's in to reprint it. I don't see this getting reprinted first or second quarter of 2019, which gives you some time to get in and get out.
Well, and also, even if you don't want to get out, it gives you time to get in. Because if you were holding off, waiting for it to be in this master set or that master set or whatever, if you want it at some point, like, also, the card's just good, right? It's just obviously insane in Commander. So if you just want to play with one for 6 months... Just go ahead and buy in now, and then if you want to get rid of it in 6 months or whatever because you're scared of Reaper, you can. Or you know what? You can just get 6 months of use out of it as the price goes up.
And we're getting Gruul and Simic in the next set. What are the odds we don't get a Land Matters, either Commander or card that makes that worth it?
Well, I don't know that... I mean, I don't know. It's hard to imagine any particular card printed that makes me want Oracle Moldiah in a deck where I didn't already want Oracle Moldiah, because I want Oracle Moldiah in all the decks.
No, but I'm saying, like, if someone didn't have that deck built, all of a sudden there's a
oh,
a
I see.
Reason.
Okay. They're going to build new decks that want one.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm with you. Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Every new deck's a new opportunity for Oracle. So all I just, right. it's just one of those cards. There's so many cards that got squeezed out. Like, there's so many $50 cards that probably could have been in the set, but they can't print every $50 card. Plus, they can't have every mythic be $50. You need Balefire Dragons as much as you need Temporal Manipulation. So, sorry, Food Chain. So, there are a lot of stuff, but I think Oracle of Moldiah has the strongest numbers in EDH, and it's got the... Even at its current price, I think it's got some upside, and I think you can make some money picking and flipping.
All right, I've got a pick.
Corbin, just before you go, I would just want to let you know your last three picks have all started with the letter B, so I'm going to need you to continue that trend.
What were his last three picks?
Baneslayer,
no,
Angel.
Don't say it because people who don't have access to the spreadsheet shouldn't have that sort of inside information, should they?
All right, I'm picking Batter Skull.
Are you?
But also Stony Silence.
Okay.
Sony Silence has just been creepy. It got reprinted in Modern Masters 2017. It was down to $4. It has just creeped its way back up to $7 with extremely solid growth over the past year and a half. It's just one of those cards that it might continue creeping up. I don't know where it's going to get reprinted next easily. So it seems kind of difficult to reprint, honestly, unless you just randomly throw it into a core set or whatever. But I think that... It's at the very least, it's going to creep up
But it might just explode. You know, it might just reach a breaking point as cards that creep up do and jump up to 15. You know, maybe, probably not. But either way, Sony Silence at 7. But here's my real pick of the week. And it's not a pick of the week for financial purposes, although it has a pretty strong financial value. I'm going to make the call shot. The Manamorphos is going to be in Ravnica Allegiant.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
You're
think about it.
Sticking it's with just, that, huh?
It feels so... It feels like criminally negligent of Wizards of the Coast to not put that card in place of Vengeful Rebirth in Ultimate Masters. If it is not slated for another reprint somewhere.
I think it could also be criminally negligent to let that card be in the same standard as Goblinolin Electromancer and Arclight Phoenix.
Maybe. It could be, right? We don't know how powerful that turns out to actually be, but what I do know is that Manamorphos is a $15 common, and this is just stupid. And it's a $20 uncommon in Modern. This is just stupid. And it jumped because it wasn't in Ultimate Masters. So, maybe they just missed it. Maybe it's just a $10 common/uncommon they chose not to reprint, and that's why it's exploding, and now we won't get it for another 2 years or whatever. But when they packed the set with so much value, it feels like such an easy auto-include. It was just so obvious that it has to be slated for somewhere. Maybe that's not Ravnica Allegiant. Maybe that's whatever else set. Maybe that's, you know, a nonce. Maybe that's Battle Bond Nation. Maybe it's already... What I think is that it's slotted in somewhere. And when I look at it, you know, they have hybrid mana cards in Ravnica. It fits perfectly. It would be cool in Standard. Do we think that Goblin Electromancer, Manamorphos, Arclight Phoenix is going to be broken? Or is it just going to be a good deck, right? It feels hard for me to believe that Manamorphos is going to be broken. It would be very good. Very, very good. But there's lots of very, very good cards in Standard. So,
I don't know,
man. That's just my call. That's just... We've got Gruul coming up. This is...
You miss Ryan Bouchard, don't you? Because he used to say shit like this, and now he's gone.
This is, I think, maybe the only time I've ever done something like this. But somebody was just asking me about it last week, and I was like... It just has to be in the next set, right? They wouldn't do this. They wouldn't just create a $20 common.
They would.
They just wouldn't, man. They would. They just, you're right, but I don't want them to. I don't want
them
to.
They would. They've done it, and they would. They did it with Serum Visions, man.
They did. Serum Visions was insane.
$12 for 3 years or something like that.
But that's what Manamorphos has been. And now it's 20. Like, they have to be smarter than this. So, I don't know, man. If I'm wrong, I think... That it's slated for a reprint somewhere. I think that the most likely avenue is Ravnica Legion, but it just feels so bad to not be in Ultimate Masters if it's not somewhere. So that's what I'm saying. We'll see. Maybe it'll just be an FNM Pro. All right, there we go. All right. We'll see. We'll see if I'm a genius or not in a month or two. What do you guys think? Anything else you want to get off your... get out there before we head out this week?
No.
No, DJ says.
We've had enough stuff that's going to get this podcast shut down, so can't we just call it a day before we step in it?
All right, there you go. We're calling it a day. This is Brainstorm Brewery, everybody. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.